Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:15, and that is Pacific Summer Time. And today is June 30th, so it's the end of the first half of the year. And interestingly enough, the S&P 500, despite what has been a first half of the year, which has been characterized by just incredible volatility, is squeaking out a positive return. It's up 2%, 2.69% on the S&P 500. The Nasdaq's down about 3%. The Dow is up about 2%. But the vast majority of Europe is down in excess of 5, 6%. Spain and Italy down 14% and 24% respectively. And of course, the volatility in stock markets has been largely influenced by considerable volatility in the currency markets as well. So, for example, and the FTSE 100 is up 4% this year in nominal terms, but in US dollar terms, it's still down almost 6.5%. In Japan, the domestic market is down in nominal terms 18%, but in US dollar terms, down 4%. So then it's not easy to it's not difficult to ascertain that the strength of the yen has represented a significant headwind to the domestic stock market. The Chinese market is down 15% this year, and there's continued evidence that despite it was pretty much unchanged, 15% so far this year, there's pretty good evidence that the CSI 300 is getting some support around that 3,000 level. But the last thing they want is upward volatility. And then the ASX 200 is pretty much unchanged on the year. It's up a little bit in US dollar terms, down a little bit in nominal terms. And it was up 1.7% today. And perhaps not least because we have such incredible uncertainty. With so much uncertainty with relation to the UK's relationship with Europe, with Boris Johnson bowing out of the leadership race for the Conservative Party, and he was so widely expected to be the new Prime Minister, then that throws additional uncertainty into the mix. Then with China perhaps taking advantage of political chaos in Europe to be more assertive in the South China Sea, then you have continued uncertainty about the US presidential cycle. And all of that is leading through to additional uncertainty, and not least because we've had such incredible volatility in stock markets. So the response of central banks likely to be? They're more than likely going to return to the exact same playbook that they have had for the last almost decade, which is that the Governor of the Bank of England today, Mr. Carney, confirmed this, that they're going to lower interest rates, they're going to start buying up bonds, they're going to artificially depress yields even further, and they're going to engage in continued extraordinary monetary policy. And considering that the role of liquidity in firing the bull market that's been in evidence for the last 7 years is such that there is now evidence of sort of a liquidity addiction to the stocks, then look at the rallies that we've had on Wall Street. When I was recording the audio on Tuesday, the S&P was right around the region of the moving average, and today it's just brushing the 2100 level, which is the upper side of the range, and this has been an even more emphatic upward dynamic so far this week relative to the downward dynamic that we got last week. So then that's a rebuttal of the bearish hypothesis, at least in the very short term. And of course, now the big question is what happens next, because we're pretty close again to the upper side of the range, and this range has been in evidence for much of the last 18 months, and it would be a clear downward dynamic would confirm resistance in this area. But the big question, and then it is no longer, and it was a big question before the Brexit vote, but it's much less of a big question this week, is how likely is it the Fed is going to raise interest rates? And it's pretty unlikely at this stage. And one could perhaps say that it isn't likely at all. Therefore, there isn't any central bank is raising interest rates right now. South Korea might well be one of the or the first Asian country outside of Japan to adopt a quantitative easing program, and they cut their interest rates last week. China's allowing its currency to devalue, and they are attempting to go through this reform with a weaker currency, in much the same way that the UK has allowed its currency to decline. And the pound was really quite volatile in here today. It was as low today as 132, and it tested 135. So almost 3 cent move on the day, and is finishing out the day down about 1 cent at 133.25. The euro is at 111 exactly, down a tad. But the real performers today were the commodity cycle sector, where platinum was up $15, palladium was up $8, silver was up $44, and gold was up just a tad, and really quite steady in this 1320 area. But with silver breaking out and platinum firming up once more, then how likely is it that gold is going to experience a big pullback, but rather that these are the high beta versions of gold, and that would suggest that gold is likely to break out again once more. And the Gold Bugs Index was also pushing new highs in here today as well. The industrial metal sector was also a bit firmer in here, and copper continues to rebound from that $2 area, so it's up about 10% in just the last couple of weeks. The rebound in European stock markets is a bit more modest than the currency devaluation aided FTSE 100, but they are at least steadying in here. And then it really is a question of no longer whether there's going to be additional monetary stimulus, but how large is it going to be. And the bullish case for stocks is largely predicated on how large is the monetary accommodation from central banks likely to be, because it's going to need to be larger than it has previously been in order to really move the needle, because valuations are so much higher now than they would have been 6 years ago. But then when we look at the bond markets, they've been incredibly steady. The gilt is around 128. It was up a little bit in here today, so yields went down. And the bund is at 167. It was up a tad in here as well, so yields contracted a bit further. Then if you look around the world, then it's hard to find a country where there isn't some sort of yield compression going on, and it's creating a storm for yield-hungry investors. And I was at a board meeting for the Nevada Trust Company yesterday, and one of the primary considerations for many clients is that they are yield-hungry, that they need the yield, they need the income, and it's increasingly hard to find, and it's only to be found in an uncomfortable place for many conservative investors. So then you do have to sort of look around for it. And the kinds of places that yield can be found are in big global companies that have got truly global franchises, that have long records of increasing their dividends. Their dividends might not be particularly high, but they have a solid record of increasing them. The really big dividends are in the energy sector. So the oil price is one that I think a lot of people are very keenly watching. And oil was down today by about $1.50. And it staged a 3-day rally. So we're still within this range. But the progression of higher reaction lows absolutely needs to hold, because oil prices have just about doubled already from their January low. So we're rapidly getting back to a place where producers can hedge future production at reasonably attractive levels and at economic levels to sustain their operations. And if that is indeed the case, then the impetus for additional upside will be diminished somewhat, because marginal producers will be able to survive that bit longer. So we're really at a pivotal point for the oil price, because it's getting increasingly difficult for it to go higher. And then the risk is that additional supply comes back into the market, and some of the unforeseen disruptions get repaired, not least in Nigeria or in Canada, and then prices can potentially come back down. And what we would anticipate is that following a type one bottom, which was the acceleration lower, and an equally impressive massive reaction against that prevailing trend, which is currently underway, that would probably be followed by a potentially volatile, very rangy environment where prices begin to demonstrate that they can find support above the January and early February lows. So we're not there quite yet, but what it would suggest is that is going to be the real proof in the pudding for some of those big yield paying energy companies. Will they be able to sustain those dividends in an environment where prices perhaps range somewhere between $30 and $60 for the foreseeable future? When we look at stock markets, I just want to reiterate that it is really very important to really watch them right now, because if we do indeed see the S&P being able to sustain an upward break, and that being predicated on liquidity rather than valuation contraction or corporate profits improving, then that would confirm that we are moving into the third psychological perception stage, where investors just stop looking at valuations and just turn into momentum investors and basically follow on the coattails of the Fed and the ECB and the Bank of Japan and the People's Bank of China and the Bank of England and say, well, if they're buying, I'll buy too. And then that would represent a mania. That would represent a period of time where valuations could go from somewhat expensive or somewhat reasonable to downright expensive. And it would also represent potentially an accelerating move, and not least because the market has been going sideways already for 18 months. It's a clearly defined range, and a range is an explosion waiting to happen. So a breakout, if it were to occur, would be likely to take an awful lot of people by surprise. So we're at a pivotal point for markets, because while that represents a potential outcome, the alternative is that markets encounter resistance at this level, that a number of people who really did get frightened last week look on this rally as an opportunity to let go of some of their inventory, and prices start to come back down again. So some of those people may have been already stopped out because of the severity of the pullback last week, that they had already decided that if markets couldn't break out, that they would go down. So it really is all to play for here, and it is a particularly important time to be monitoring stocks. But if we look at the medium-term trend for precious metals, then it does look really quite encouraging, and particularly for silver, where prices really are still less than 40% of where they were at the peak. With that, I will leave you for today, and wish all the best to all of you.